Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
The LA Lakers, you know that huge move to label certain NBA games must-win games? We've been talking about that. Except the Suns and the Lakers, Saturday night, that was not a must-win. That was not a must-win for LA. That was a can't-lose. Facing a 12-win Suns team, the worst team in the association. What that is a free spin on the board. The Suns don't give a damn. The Suns haven't given a damn for a long time. That's how you're sitting on 12 wins in March, by not giving a damn. They don't give a damn. They have nothing to play for. And you're going up against a team that had everything to play for, that was trying to salvage their season. So, if you're a Laker team trying to grind out a playoff spot against a team that shut it down months ago, you absolutely cannot lose. Phoenix, 118. LA, 109. Uh-oh! If that was not the end of their playoff hopes, then you can pretty much see it from right here. And in effect, it pretty much was the end. The only shocking part of losing to the Suns is that it wasn't a shock at all. It fits with what the Lakers have been doing since Christmas. And by the way, they didn't just lose to the Suns. They got hammered by the Suns. I don't want to say they laid down, but how else would you describe what that was Saturday night? Luke Walton said before that game, it was, quote, a game we have to win. And then his guys come right out and they fall behind by double digits in the first quarter. They were down by 19 in the fourth quarter in a game they had to have against the worst team in the league. Smacked by a team that was sitting on 12 wins in March with nothing to play for. If that's not laying down, what would you call it? I mean, exactly who or what are these guys playing for right now? These dudes are DOA, dead on arrival. But don't take my word for it. What do I know? Take it instead from Snoop. Snoop had a few choice words for their effort. Just none that I can really play on the radio.
And it's terrible watching my Lakers play. Somebody got to go. Somebody got to go. Matter of fact, a lot of got to go. Starting with the coach. Well, this ain't going to work. This is not the L.A. way. All them out. These sorry motherfuckers ain't going to do nothing. Get LeBron some help. Because these goofballs ain't going to do They sorry. They suck. I'm selling my booth right now. I got a booth for the next 2 years, 3 years. This year, y'all can have it. $5 for the motherfucking booth to the Laker games. $5 is the price. Anybody can have it. All the homies hit me. Blow me up right now.
Blow me up right now. You can have my booth for $5. All you homies hit me up. Blow me up right now. I don't even know where to start with that. That was so awesome. But there was nothing better than Snoop glossing the non-LeBron Lakers as, quote, goofballs. He's right. If you're getting blown out by the Suns in a game that you have to keep your season alive against a team that really doesn't want to win at all, you are a bunch of goofballs. Now, I'm not saying that LeBron is without blame. Far from it. Missing key free throws late in games, playing that Matador D like he's nailed to the floor, and inbounding the ball off the back of the glass. Definitely all include goofball properties. But nothing Snoop said was unfair. None of that was unfair. Especially that part about the goofballs that LeBron's running with. Yeah, I know Laker fans. If any of you are even going to try and make this argument, there are still 19 games left. They're only 4 games back of the Spurs and the Clippers in the loss column. They can still do this. Yeah, sure they could. But how the hell can I make that argument when these goofballs keep lying down against the worst in the league? Has anybody anywhere seen anything that leads you to believe that these goofballs are going to figure this out? Yeah, and look who's waiting to smash the final nail in the coffin. Their crosstown rival, and a team that is everything that the Lakers are not right now. The Clippers, united, gritty, playing for each other instead of quitting on each other. And if you're a Laker fan, the only thing more humiliating than losing to the Suns on Saturday would be getting choked out by little brother tonight. So there you go. Lakers v. Clippers, 7:30 p.m. Pacific at Staples. The battle for L.A., the battle for the playoffs. This is it. This is everything. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Lakers better show the hell up. They better show the hell up tonight, because the last thing I want to do is have to run this take back exactly as it is 24 hours from right now. And believe me, the last thing Snoop Alvey wants to see is a repeat of what he saw Saturday night.
And it's terrible watching my Lakers play. Somebody got to go. Somebody got to go. Matter of fact, a lot of got to go. Starting with the coach. Well, this ain't going to work. This is not the L.A. way. Up all them out. These sorry motherfuckers ain't going to do nothing. Get LeBron some f***ing help, because these goofballs ain't going to do s***. They sorry. They f***ing suck. I'm selling my f***ing booth right now. I got a booth for the next 2 years, 3 years. This year, y'all can have it. $5 for the motherf***ing booth to the Laker games. $5 is the price. Anybody can have it. All the homies hit me. Blow me up right now.
I always say saying something sucks is not a take, unless it's Snoop saying that the Lakers bleeping suck. And you can have his booth for $5.
They f***ing suck.
Goofballs. Matt Norlander is my guest. Matt, happy new year. What's up? How are you?
I appreciate that, Jim. Doing well. Best month of the year. You know it. I know it. And I am ready for whatever this crazy month is going
to
give us.
Exactly right. Listen, before we get to the best month of the year, in fact, before we even get to college basketball, let me ask you this. I saw where you checked out the documentary Free Solo last night. If we're talking right now, that means you made it through. What do you make of that movie and Alex Honnold?
That was unreal. Like, truly, my wife couldn't watch it with me. She is like, I can't handle this. I do think after watching that, it might just be the greatest athletic achievement in human history. When you consider what he did without a rope, that was gripping is the word, even though it's a pun. That was unbelievable. I can't even fathom having the mentality to do that. But early in that documentary, they had a doctor literally check out his brain, and she said, the receptors in your brain that trigger, endorphin charges and adrenaline and kind of, create scares and excite you, they're not even registering like a normal human being. So when that dude is dangling, thousands of feet off the ground, it's not the same for him as it is for most other of us. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
Well said. I mean, I saw that movie and I knew that I was going to talk to him the next day, and I had trouble seeing through the movie. I mean, it was that gripping and it was that intense, and I knew how it ended because I knew I was talking to him the next day, and still the thing was hard to watch. I agree. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, so now we're 13 days away, that being said. We're 13 days away from the bracket being announced. Let me start right here. Is there any doubt in your mind, Matt, that Gonzaga is going to be a number one?
No doubt. It's going to happen. Gonzaga's almost certainly going to win the WCC auto bid, but even if it were to lose its quarterfinal game, it's going to be a one. Jim, to me with Gonzaga, I'm a bit dumbfounded by the fact that there is still a relatively noisy chorus of detractors out there with this program. Making the national title game 2 years ago doesn't seem to have shut some people up. Gonzaga just came off its fifth time running the table in the WCC. And in fact, won those games by an average of 27 points. It's the greatest margin of victory on average for one team over all of its league opponents by any school in college basketball since Tark was running the Rebels back in the early 90s. So it's absurd what Mark Few has done there. And then, as you well know, because Mark Few is a good friend of the show, he has done this most of the season without last season's leading scorer, Killian Chilley, a guy that, if fully healthy, might well be the best player on the team. They've still done this, and he hasn't played in most of the games. We wait and see on if Chilley will come back or not. But in absence of that, Gonzaga, surefire, number one seed in the West. And it's going to be extremely hard for me personally not to write them in automatically into the Elite Eight minimally, and if not the Final Four, because this is shaping up as a team that's just as good as the one that lost to Carolina in the championship game in 2017.
Hey, check this. I understand that finding high-quality clothing that fits great is not always easy. Let me tell you about my favorite new company, a company founded by pro surfer and 11-time world champion Kelly Slater, a company whose mission is to provide great clothes that do not harm the environment. I'm talking about Outer Known Clothes. Outer Known Clothes are for people and planet. High quality, sustainable clothes, durable construction, and great fit. Outerknown only works with factories that pay fair living wages and provide safe working conditions. I've watched Kelly Slater for years. I have always respected him, his brand, and his business. And when we had this opportunity to go into a partnership for this, it was a no-brainer. I love the way the clothes look. I love the way they feel. I love what that company's about and what they represent. Go to outerknown.com today. Enter my code ROME at checkout. You'll get 25% off your full price order. That's outerknown.com. OUTERKNOWN.com. And remember to use my code ROME at checkout. Get 25% off. Check them out right now. OuterKnown.com. And don't forget the promo code ROME and get your 25% off. Matt Norlander joining us. You know, I don't know what I can add to that other than to say, whatever we say about Mark Few, it's still not enough. I mean, Matt, the thing is, I can't believe that I used to have him on this show years back, and we would literally talk about, well, what are you going to do when your name comes up for another job? Because now, thankfully, his name doesn't really come up for any jobs the same way it used to, but the fact of the matter is, there may not be a better job for him. What's it say about this guy that they're a borderline lock for a one seed 2 weeks before the Selection Sunday program, and he's doing it at Gonzaga? In other words, whatever we say about this guy, it's still not enough.
You are so right, Jim. There's nothing we can say that's enough. He is going to, I think he is going to the Hall of Fame eventually, because whenever he decides to step away, and I don't think he's close to retirement, and really, if you talk to writers, coaches in the business, they'll say that few coaches, if any, have a better work-life balance as Mark Few. And whenever he steps away from Gonzaga, we're going to look back and say, okay, he inherited the program. Remember, he did not coach them when they made – he wasn't the head coach when they made that first Elite Eight run back in the late 90s. But he took it over soon thereafter, and he has continued a run that is absurd. I mean, Gonzaga is right there with Kansas, Duke, Michigan State in terms of – making the tournament 20 straight years. That is unthinkable. And, yeah, I mean, we can't say enough good things about what he's done and also how he runs the program. He really is wired differently from a lot of other coaches. And something he doesn't get a lot of credit for happens behind the scenes, just to kind of, inform listeners on this. You know, we've got the net ranking this year, and it's kind of the way the bracket is being built and assembled is different. Mark Few led the change to kill the RPI behind the scenes with the NABC, and really, you know, partly because, frankly, Gonzaga in many years was getting messed around in the seeding. It should have been higher in some years than it was. So he has actually been a part of the charge in fundamentally changing the way the selection committee even evaluates teams and stuff. So his impact on the sport has been even greater than I think some people realize.
Agreed. Matt Norlander joining us. All right, you mentioned Duke. So Zion Williamson has not played since that knee injury against North Carolina. Duke is 2-1 of those two games since, losing to Virginia Tech and Blacksburg. How has Duke looked to you without Zion?
They've looked good. They haven't looked like the best team in America. They haven't looked like a team that can win the national title without him. We do have an update as of today, by the way. Mike Krzyzewski said on the ACC conference call with the media, I didn't realize there was a four-phase thing that Zion was going through, but he is in phase four of a four-phase stage. This is relatively important news because Duke's final home game is Tuesday against Wake Forest, and so if you're Zion Williamson and this is your only year at the school, do you want your last moment at Cameron Indoor 34 seconds into the game against Carolina, your shoe busts? Like, who knows what is going to happen with Zion Williamson in the next 20 years of his life, but that is the defining moment of his college career right now so far, which is saying something because he's had, you know, 47 absurd highlights that we need to stuff into his NBA draft reel whenever we pull that together. Big picture is he wants to probably play in that game against Wake if he can go, because he wants to have one more full, complete game at Cameron. So we wait and see. Probably won't get an update for at least 24 hours whether he can go or not. But without him, they can't win the national title. With him, they can. I will note that R.J. Barrett, though, he has reminded a lot of people. R.J. Barrett was the preseason pick to be the number one pick in the draft. He was the number one player in this class, and he has stepped up and played very well in his absence. He has shown that without Zion Williamson available to play, he might be, in fact, the most talented player in college hoops.
Matt Norlander joining us. All right, so if Zion is in phase four, we'll see about his return. Let me ask you about Tennessee. Tennessee lost to Kentucky by 17 in mid-February, and then they beat them by 19 on Saturday. What do you make of what you've seen from the Volunteers so far, actually of late, and then on Saturday in particular?
beat him by 19, and Admiral Schofield wanted to beat him by 21. Jim, did you see how he tried to slam home that dunk in the final second, and it just didn't get off when they got that steal at the end of the game?
I did.
That was that was the message. Here's what I make of him. Tennessee, we have a tendency when these high-profile teams lose big games at the end of February, early March, when more people are paying attention to college basketball, to say, you know what, they were overrated. No, if you look at the body of Tennessee's work, they've been outstanding. That's a one seed right now on CBSSports.com, according to our Jerry Palm. I agree with that. And guess what? Grant Williams and Admiral Schofield, probably the best combo of the two most unafraid dudes in the sport. They're great quotes. So they're great for hacks like me. But they also have tremendous team chemistry. Jordan Bone had 27 against Kentucky. So it's fascinating to see that Kentucky just romped on its home floor against Tennessee. Tennessee returned the favor in kind. Will we get a third matchup between these teams in the SEC tournament and or the NCAA tournament, which, if it happened, wouldn't happen until Minneapolis at minimum there. But I'm a buyer on the Vols, and they are without question capable of winning the national championship. And a note on Grant Williams, I think he locked up SEC Player of the Year with that performance against Kentucky. We haven't had a guy go back-to-back like Williams seems to figure to be doing right now since Corliss Williamson at Arkansas in the mid-1990s. So that's
the big, nasty.
That's a pretty cool thing for him. Pretty awesome. So yeah, UT is for real. Sell them at your own peril. I don't see any way. They don't. Every single coach you talk to that's played against them, Jim, says they don't beat themselves, which is mostly the case. I think the one exception was the game at Kentucky. I don't see them losing early the way they did to Loyola last season. I think they're as close to a lock to get into the Sweet 16 as any team not named Gonzaga or Duke.
Matt, so if you're buying, if you're a buyer on Tennessee, where are you on Kentucky? For instance, Kentucky was left for dead in some places after they lost to Duke by 34 in the season opener. I think they're a different team, obviously, now than they were then. But they have not been to a Final Four since 2015. Now, we know nearly every other program in the country would love to be able to say that they have not been to a Final Four since 2015. But what is your sense as to what Kentucky fans make of this so-called drought? And is this the team to end it?
Yeah, they've got a good shot. Now, we've made a lot about Zion Williamson being out with a knee injury for Duke, and Kentucky's also had an issue in that its most physically imposing player, Reed Travis, didn't play in the Tennessee game. He's been out for a little while. So Kentucky fans are confident once Travis returns, and he is expected to return, we just don't know, have a timeline on whether it'll be one, two, three, four more games. We wait and see, but I think that he will be a go when the NCAA tournament starts. This team's got the capability to do it. I was in Lexington just a couple weeks ago, spoke with the staff, and they said P.J. Washington's ability to be an alpha has been a huge difference. Him being that sophomore leader, and yes, at Kentucky, if you're a sophomore, it's just a de facto thing, but really he's taken on that role in a significant way. You combo that with Keldon Johnson's natural talent, Tyler Hero, completely unafraid of the moment. I can totally envision Kentucky being in a tight game in the second round, and then Tyler Hero just bombs in a three with 9 seconds to go to give him a win. He's built like that. Although, if you watch the game over the weekend, Cal, like, went after Hero in a very aggressive way in the timeout. Although, you like to see that, though. Like, they're focused in, and the loss was brutal for Kentucky, but I'm not selling on them either. They are easily a top-10 team in college basketball. They've got a shot to get back to the Final Four, but as Kentucky fans know, even though they've been there frequently under Calipari, it's harder to do than most realize. So even if it doesn't happen this year, Cal is going to be up there among the most, you know, prominent coaches to get there over and over again, whether they do it or not. But the short answer or the long answer is they can do it. I just want to see if Reed Travis can return to full strength.
He covers college basketball for CBSSports.com. He is a co-host of CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast and a good friend of the program, Matt Norlander, our guest. Matt, great to have you back. Have a great March. Hope we can do it again soon.
You got it, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Monday's Daily Jungle is brought to you by Capterra. Remember the year 1989? You know, the year the World Wide Web was invented? Yeah, well, we've come a long way in 30 years. So why does it feel like the software that you use every single day at work is stuck in the past? Take a leap into the future by finding the right software for your business on Capterra.com. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. Search more than 700 specific categories of software. What I'm saying is, no matter what kind of software your business needs, Capterra makes it easy to discover the right solution fast. Join the millions of people who use Capterra every single month to find the right tools for their business. Like here in the jungle, I knew my software was whack. I knew it was outdated. I had no idea until I jumped in with Capterra. I'm telling you, it's making a huge difference for us, and it can for you too. Visit Capterra.com/Rome for free today, and you'll find the right tools to make 2019 the year for your business. Capterra.com/Rome. Let me spell that for you. Capterra, Capterra.com/Rome. Now, guys have had regrettable starts to press conferences. They have misspoke. It happens. And they take some when it does. So if you're still trying to get used to Bryce Harper as a Philadelphia Philly, don't worry. My man is too. Because before that ink could even dry on a brand new record-breaking 13-year, $330 million deal, the team had the new face of the franchise in Clearwater to meet with the media. Normally, those are pretty forgettable introductory pressers, unless you're like Les Miles. And then you blank on where you are and what you're talking about because you're having a, quote, heartfelt.
I'm having a little heartfelt here.
Unfortunately for Harper, he also forgot something, like which city he was going to bring a championship trophy back to if the Phillies win the World Series.
You know, that's what it's all about. That's what I want to do. You know, we want to bring a title back to D.C. I want to be on Broad Street on a freaking boat or whatever, a thing, a bus, whatever it is, and, you know, have a trophy over my head.
You catch that? I'm pretty sure my man just said the Phillies are looking to bring a title back to the district.
You know, that's what it's all about. That's what I want to do. You know, we want to bring a title back to D.C. I want to be on Broad Street on a freaking boat or...
Naturally, the internet had a field day with that clip. Hell, even Noah Syndergaard of the Mets jumped on Instagram and wrote, quote, "We want to bring home a title to D.C. Oops, I mean Queens." Let me tell you something. That would have been a great joke. That would have been a great joke if Thor did not play for the Mets. Because Bryce has a better chance of bringing a title back to D.C. as a member of the Phillies than the Mets do of bringing back a title to anywhere. But I'm not here to pile on. Clearly, that was just a misspeak from a guy who had spent the last 7 years in the nation's capital. How many of us are still writing 2018 on various documents? It's not like Bryce said he wants to roll a parade float down Pennsylvania Avenue. He name-dropped Broad Street and was a Pats and Geno's reference away from getting a statue on the Rocky Steps. It's not like this guy did, I don't know. It's not like he called Atlanta, Alanda.
Atlanta.
It's not like he called me Drew, the Jumpman, Gillett.
Drew, the Jumpman, Gillett? Oh, man, I'm nervous. How's it going?
It's not like he called Iray, Iafrady.
Going to buy Iafrady a house in Long Beach because I don't want him in Tulsa.
It's not like he called a grown man a bad girl.
A bad girl.
And meant it like it was some kind of crazy, sick burn.
A bad girl.
It's not like he went off on a tangent about Iraq and South Africa when he was asked why 1/5 of Americans cannot locate the U.S. on a map.
Some people out there in our nation don't have maps.
He didn't do any of that. He simply misspoke. And it was inadvertent. And he explained what happened the very next day.
Of course, I made that comment yesterday about D.C., trying to bring back the title to D.C. And, you know, that's something that I tried to do for the last 7 years. So it's going to be new. It's going to be different.
He said it himself. It's going to be new. It's going to be different. And we all know that new and different does take some getting used to. So you might as well get off this guy. I mean, that comment from the presser, that was not that big of a deal. Everybody wanted to make that out to be a really, really big deal. That's not the comment from that presser that folks should be focused on. The comment that should be getting more run was when Harper was explaining the economics of baseball and why his contract might even allow the Phillies to take another big swing at another huge free agent in only a couple of years.
You know, I think baseball is worth about $11.5 billion. You know, I think some of it should go back to the players as well. You know, I'm making 26 a year or something like that. So I think that's going to be able to bring some other guys in as well to be able to help this organization win. I know there's another guy in about 2 years that comes up off the books, you know, that we'll see what happens with him.
Uh-oh. I know there's another guy in about 2 years that comes off the books, and we'll see what happens then. Damn, Bryce. Tamper much? Magic Johnson would be proud of how blatant that recruiting pitch was. Irv is proud of you for that. This guy's been in Philadelphia for like 2 seconds, and he's already taking a very public run at Mike Trout. Even insinuating that his contract is going to make it so that team can make a legitimate run at Mike Trout. So if you're a Philly fan, if you think Philly fan might be bent over that DC slip, think again. Think about how Angel fan must feel after hearing Bryce Harper recruit their dude to come back home. That's the story. That's the real thing. That's what people should focus on. Forget the geographical mix-up. Bryce is out here trying to swing the balance of power in baseball before taking even one cut in spring training. And I'm here for it. I really am, legal or not. I mean, I'm a SoCal. I don't live that far from Angel Stadium. I love having Mike Trout around here. But I love that somebody is trying to do something to shake things up. I mean, again, this was the dude who was on a crusade to, quote, make baseball fun again. Remember? A couple of years back? And if the NBA has taught us anything at all, it's that most of the fun is actually off of the floor. So Bryce is doing his part. And if any reporters are going to ask this guy if he wants Mike Trout in the same outfield, best know what's coming when you ask a question like that.
That's a clown question, bro.
It is, right?
That's a clown question, bro.
It is a clown question, bro.
That's a clown question, bro.
1-800-636-8686. Not a big deal. Not a big deal. This guy understands. John Hedstrom tweets, give Bryce Harper a break. At least he didn't thank himself. Signed, John Elway.
Thank you to John Elway.
That's the distinction I'm trying to make. This is why I didn't give Bryce the treatment. Bryce didn't get that treatment because Bryce didn't thank himself.
Thank you to John Elway.
Thank you to John Elway? Dave Roberts. Dave, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
Hey, Romy, I got a surprise for you. Ready?
Yes, I love surprises.
Romy, that was for you. The Dodger faithful right here at Camelback Ranch.
I love it. Dodger fans at Camelback. That's great, Dave. Thank you very much.
Right,
what's
Romy.
It like? How are things going?
They're going great. They're going great. You know, with camp, obviously, in every camp, there's a lot of energy, excitement. You know, we got a lot of good players. It's a lot of fun, Romy. We're excited for 2019.
Dave Roberts joining us. All right, so I know that after the season is over, you head back to San Diego County, and as you've said, you become, quote, Southern California, Dave. Let me just ask you this. As somebody as competitive as you are, how do you go about unplugging and then recharging in the offseason?
So, you know, last year, as all years, Romy, can be trying, and it's a grind. I was fortunate enough, Romy, to take a few trips. I did Italy for a week with some friends. I did Maui with the family, and then I did a guy's trip to Jackson Hole. So I am recharged and ready to go.
Oh, man, that's amazing. All three of those trips are amazing. I'm not going to ask you what you like best because they're so different. Where did you
that's
go
right.
in Italy?
So we did Tuscany. We flew into Rome, and then we did Florence, which is one of my favorite cities in the world. Did Siena, stayed in this great villa in Tuscany, and it was just food, wine.
Dave Roberts, my guest. Adam, Dave, can you hear me right now? Because I lost
yes,
you momentarily.
Sir.
Good, there you go. Siena is amazing. Really quickly, how about the guys' trip in Jackson Hole? What was that like? That's an amazing place.
Oh, my gosh, Romy. I've taken this guys' trip. It's an outlaw trip, we call it. And our good friend sort of sponsors 50 guys. And Trevor Hoffman, the newly Hall of Famer, Loretta, Osmus, McCaskill, Buddy Black. It's like who's who in baseball. We take this guys' trip, Romy. It's unbelievable. There's skiing, snowboarding, guys hanging out, great dinners, and what an amazing place at Jackson Hole.
Dave Roberts, my guest. You know what? I'm going to pick. I just picked up on this. Notice one of the first names. You mentioned 50 guys, but one of the first names that you just mentioned is one of the most underrated guys and one of the most underrated players, Loretta. I love Mark Loretta. That's a quality guy right there.
He's a pro and career 300 hitter, did things the right way, and worked for the Padres for some years as a special assistant. Now he's a bench coach for the Cubs and Joe Madden. So to get to go in with both feet, went to Northwestern, played baseball there. He and his wife are from, or she's from Chicago. So it's good to have him back in the game, and, yeah, he's one of my best friends.
Oh, she's great. Hillary's great. Well, I'm glad we got caught up there, Skip. Now we can talk a little bit of baseball. You recently told The Athletic that the only thing that worries me is our players are too focused on winning the World Series and not what we have to do to get back there again. Can you lay that out? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, I think that people get tired of the word process. But the thing is, though, it's real. And so when you're talking about the Dodgers and our goal every year is to win the World Series, you know, the expectations from fans, media, themselves, and I think that we can't win the World Series in spring training or April, but we can go out there and get better each day. And so that's sort of my message. And when we look up at the end of the season and we win the division and we're playing to you know, win a championship again, then we'll get there and we'll address that. But right now, our focus is trying to be micro, Romy, and get better each day.
We're talking to Dodgers manager Dave Roberts. You know, when you look at this thing, Dave, in your three seasons as a manager, you've won two pennants, three divisional titles. You've been a manager of the year. By any measure, this is amazing success. Are you able to see it that way, or does it feel like it's disappointing because you didn't win a World Series?
Well, I don't see it. Obviously, we haven't accomplished our goal. Number one, but I don't see it as a failure because there's so many things that go into what we're doing here, and I think that, you know, betting on what we're doing, the people around me, we're doing things the right way, and so I definitely don't look at it as a negative. I know we've accomplished some things, and we've got a tremendous fan base. So I just believe in what we're doing is the right thing, and ultimately we will bring a championship back to L.A.
Dodgers manager Dave Roberts joining us once again. Now, you did bring in Joe Kelly in the offseason. I've got to say, man, I love this guy's arm. I love his attitude on the mound. When you think of how he showed up for Boston in the World Series, how excited are you to have him in your bullpen this season?
It's insane. You look back at 4 months ago, and this guy was dominant in the postseason and obviously had his way with us. And so to get him in a Dodger uniform where he made a point that this is where he wanted to land. So to get that deal done, get him in camp and really assimilating with our guys on the team, the position players, the guys in the pen, him and Kenley are inseparable right now. So to have Joe to go one plus at any point in time in the game to help us win a baseball game. And like you said, the stuff, the arm, I like the 97 to 100, Romy.
You're right. The 97 to 100 is always a good thing. I wonder, Dave, how important is it? Like, you don't need to rebuild that thing, right? You certainly don't need to rebuild it from the ground up. But how valuable is it just to get some new blood in there?
It is. And it's one of those things where, you know, that kind of when you take a winning ball club or anything and you didn't quite accomplish, or even if you did accomplish a goal, to sort of reshuffle the deck a little bit. And we lost some players through trade and as the natural attrition happens. But to bring in guys like A.J. Pollock, you mentioned Joe Kelly, Russell Martin, to get Corey Seager back to health, I mean, this ball club, like you said, when you're the Dodgers, you don't rebuild.
Dave Roberts, my guest. What about Corey Seager? Dave, he's coming back from Tommy John. How has he looked so far?
He looks amazing. He's he went Chase Utley. He went no dairy. He's looks like that 20-year-old player that I saw when he made his debut in September in 15. And the body looks good. He's moving really well, taking balls, taking at bats, and so we'll see him probably on our side probably at the beginning of next week or in about a week with us. But he's in a great place right now, Rome.
Dave Roberts joining us. All right, so one person who's not going to be with you in camp is Bryce Harper. I understand that you were part of that group that met with him in Las Vegas. What was the conversation like, Dave?
Well, it was kind of both sides kind of talking about, you know, the opportunities, you know, how would benefit that Bryce, you know, he and his wife Kayla were there, obviously Scott's team, our guys, and Bryce obviously vetted me, the organization, so I thought it went really well, but ultimately he made the best decision for he and his family. So we're going to see those guys. They got a good club. That East is really stacked, but we wish him well, but we're going to be trying to get him out. We're going to get him out this year.
Again, let me just ask you this. I mean, he's an amazing player. Everybody would love to have a guy like that. But did you need him, or was that more of a luxury?
I think it was certainly a luxury. You know, Bryce obviously is he's a player that doesn't come around very often. And, you know, on the field, off the field, what he's about, how much he loves the game. So where we're at right now, the depth, what we have position player-wise, infield, outfield, everything, need, absolutely not. But a player like that, you got to kick the tires and vet it, and that's what we did, and I appreciate Mark, Walter, and Andrew, and all of our guys kind of going through that process.
L.A. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts joining us for a few more moments. Clayton Kershaw, Dave had that shoulder soreness earlier in camp. So what goes through you when you hear that initially, and then how do you go about developing an appropriate plan for it?
My first thought was, you know, talking to Clayton and seeing how he is mentally and how he's dealing with it. For me, fortunately, I've been around, you know, one of the greatest pitchers, if not the greatest pitcher of our generation. And so I wanted to make sure he was okay. And he was optimistic that we're going to get through this. And it was kind of a little speed bump. And the last week he's played catch and feels really good. I just talked to him about 20 minutes ago and was really encouraged. So when he's ready, he'll be ready. And so to put a timeline on him, I think would be unfair. So I'm just encouraging every day he's getting better.
I hear what you're saying. So let me ask you this. Knowing how competitive he is and how badly he wants to come back, how much of what you do is making sure that he doesn't try to rush and do too much too soon?
I think that's the thing. And I think that the trust that we've built up over the last 3 years, you know, he has that trust in me, the organization, and understanding that if it is opening day, if it's not opening day, the understanding is that playing the long view, his health number one, and having him ready when he's ready. So he's aligned with us. And like I said, Rome, he's in a good place. And like you said, we have so much depth, so much pitching, and whichever way we go, the Dodgers will be fine.
Dave, speaking of depth, I had former MLB pitcher turned analyst C.J. Nikowski on the program, and on Friday, he said that Walker Buehler is going to be the ace of your staff. It's not a matter of if, but a matter of when. We don't need to get into a comparison between the youngster and Kershaw, but that is really high praise for somebody who has only 23 regular season starts under his belt. What's your reaction when you hear that analysis?
Well, it's a good thing for us. And, you know, Walker really came of age last year, and you see that game in Milwaukee, the 163, what he did. He's just what you want in a young pitcher, and the competitor, the curiosity as far as information, always trying to get better, that swagger when he takes the mound. But honestly, it's for us, it's every single day we run a guy out there, we expect to win. So whether it's Clayton, Walker, Hunjin, Maeda, Richie Hill, it doesn't really matter.
Hey, one last thought about Walker. What makes him so unique in your mind? Is it physical or is it his mental stuff?
Well, I think that it's hard to overlook the physical. You know, when you can command the fastball 95 to 98, you've got a four-pitch mix. You have the curiosity to understand how your stuff plays, so how you can attack a hitter's weakness. That's something. And then also, it's something you can't really teach, that when you get into big spots, that the moment never gets too big for you. So Walker sort of encompasses all that.
Dave, one last thought. You mentioned Rich Hill. What's it like to have a guy like that in the clubhouse? And then what is he like with the younger pitchers?
He is a teacher. He's uber competitive. He's a CPA on days that he doesn't pitch. And the days that he starts, Romy, it reminds me of Kevin Brown, my old teammate. This guy's an absolute savage. But it's like it's kind of life experiences as he's an older pitcher, but feels that he's still 21 years old and he can chuck it and wants to throw the baseball 200 times in a game, but living every moment like it's his last. And I think that kind of mindset really lands with a lot of our guys, you know, pitchers and position players and coaches as well.
Dave, Kevin Brown, that's a blast from the past. What a maniac.
An absolute maniac.
What was he like on days that he took the ball? I mean, was that a guy that you could talk to before the game, or did everybody steer clear?
So my thing is, Romy, is that I was his locker mate. So it's one of those things that I'm a young player at the old Dodger Stadium, the clubhouse, and I've got all my stuff, and I'm trying to keep it out of his way, and his stuff gets in my way, and I'm just trying to be as small as I possibly can. And he's one of those guys on his start day, you don't even look at him because you feel he's going to rip your throat out.
don't even look at him, much less talk to him. Dave Roberts getting ready for the start of the season, which is March 28th, the Dodgers and Arizona on that day. A World Series champion as a player, 2016 NL Manager of the Year. David, it's so good to get caught up. I really appreciate you, and so good to have that conversation.
Romy, take care of yourself. Thanks again for having me on.
Why are you running a marathon, Hawk? What was your response? Let me help you. I paid for it.
Yeah.
I said, you paid for what and how much? And you responded, how?
$190 to run the marathon, non-refundable. And I would be backing out of that in 2 seconds if I could. But I can't because there's a zero refund policy.
All right. So you literally are doing it because you paid the money and Matt nailed it. He said you paid $200 to run around like a six-year-old when you paid about $190. Now, you did chase that. When I said, yeah, I could see it's about the money, but isn't there more to it? And you did admit to this, too. What did you tell me when you also said it was more than just the money? You didn't want to back out and look like a bag.
Yeah, because now everyone knows about it because it's been on this show. So I don't want to back out and look like a bag. Absolutely. I'm doing it because for like false pride.
Matt nailed it. He nailed it. He said, I'm not the type of bag to pay $200. Ding, Alvin. That's Adam. And then to run around like a six-year-old on streets. All right, that's something else. I don't have this great sense of direction. So I said to you, how do you map out a 13-mile run? What was your response?
I go to mapmyrun.com, and then I write the instructions on my hand. And so I look at my hand while I'm running so I don't get lost out there.
So you do run around like a six-year-old on streets that you pay to run around on when they're free to run any other day.
Well, Matt's got it mostly right, except for the fact that these are training runs leading up to the full marathon. So yesterday's half was the second half marathon I've run in a month, and it was for free because I just map it and I go and run around for free on the streets like he's talking about. The paid run is coming up in 3 weeks. That's the one I'm paying $200 to do. That's the one where I'll get the 26.2 bumper sticker, put it on my car, change my Twitter avatar to me holding the medal, change my bio to finisher, do all that stuff that makes me better than everyone else who's never run one.
Wow, Hawk, you got to be kidding me about that. Maybe you actually do it before you talk all that junk and run your mouth like that?
I mean,
wow, Hawk.
Yeah, there's that too.
Man, you're feeling good at your 13.1. That thing's got it. I'm surprised that thing's not on your forehead right now. It is on the back of your car, right?
There was no medal when I got home. There was no 13.1 sticker, just a wife who said, you've been gone for 2.5 hours. Would you like to parent now? Here's the thing.
I can't wait to hear the thing.
I've never been more scared.
Don't you get the 13.1 for paying? Have you paid half the amount since you've run half the marathon? Or how do people get the 13.1?
Some people pay to run half marathons.
Okay.
Yeah, I just use them as training. But yeah, I'm really scared now because I don't know how people can do that twice. Like I did it once. I did the 13.1. I have no idea how people do 26.2. I want nothing to do with the big run.
In your defense, you have done 13.1 twice in a month.
Yeah, but now I got to do it twice in 5 hours.
Uh-huh.
Which is what's going to make it really tough.
Does it have to be twice in 5 hours?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got to finish the 26.2 in the same race, you know, the big one, the full one. I got to do the full marathon.
Yeah, but why is there a clock on that? Can't you be like one of those guys who's in one of those documentaries where it's dark and everybody's been home for a week and there you are crawling backwards to get across the finish line?
I thought I could, and then I read the fine print that if you don't finish this thing in 6 hours, they pull you off the course.
Huh.
Yeah. So you got it. You got to finish this in it
because how fast did you run 13.1?
2 hours, 20 minutes. So I'm pacing 4:40 if I can still like stand up and do it.
Oh,
but
dude,
I can barely
you've got
stand
no
up.
Shot. If you're pacing 4:40 and you've got to get that thing done in 5 hours.
Yeah. To not be pulled off the course. Yeah.
Man, how disconcerting would it be if you're just killing yourself, man? And you've actually gone someplace where 99.9% of the world has never gone, and you're like mile 24, and somebody come and just rips you right off the course, like, sorry, son, you didn't get it done. Start over.
That would suck. That would absolutely suck. I wouldn't show my face at work
suck,
the next
hilarious.
Day.
Oh, yeah. Believe me, we'd go right on the air with it live. I'm thinking about doing a show live right alongside you. I'm not waiting till the next day. We're going live. The second they jerk you off that course at the 24.5-mile mark, at 5:01, that's going to be amazing. You can do it,
not
Hawk.
For
no,
me.
You can't.
Yeah, that'll suck for me. Hopefully I finish. I'm nervous about the race, but it's coming up in 3 weeks. I'm going to start tapering down the runs to save some stamina, and then we're going to get after it on Sunday.
All right, so let's go back to the questionnaire. G Self Glosser asks, did Hawk, one, throw up with a foil jacket on?
No, I did not wear a foil jacket.
Did you throw up?
No, I did not.
Did you drink a number two? Did you drink a session IPA? Peter DeBoer is my guest. Peter, it's good to have you on the show. How are you?
Great, Jim. Big fan of yours. I have been for a long time.
Well, that's nice. Peter, I appreciate you saying that. Really nice to have you on. I've been looking to do this for a long time. So let me start with last night's game. You beat Chicago 5-2, Peter, and maybe you didn't get the start that you would have liked, and that road trip might have actually caught up a little bit last night in your first game back. But how pleased were you then with the way your guys finished and came back in the third period?
I was very happy. You know what? We just went through an Eastern road trip. We ended in Boston. It's a 7 or 8 hour flight back for us to San Jose, and got off the plane and had Chicago waiting here with a real hungry young team that's fighting for a playoff spot. So I knew it would be a little bit of a trap game, and it took us a couple periods to get going, but we found a way, and I thought Chicago played an excellent game, and obviously with Taves and Kane and some of those elite players, they're dangerous every night. But we're a little banged up, but we found a way to win a real important game this time of year for us.
You know, Peter, you guys are a little bit banged up. In fact, let me ask you about Brent Burns. He's been dealing with the flu. Obviously, it's something you want to be conscious of, but at the same time, when you've got a competitor like that, how hard is it to sit him, especially when you know he wants to be out there?
Well, it's almost impossible. I mean, especially since Erik Karlsson, our other Norris Trophy-winning defenseman, is out of the lineup with a groin injury. You know, I think Burnsy, I probably would have forced him to sit, considering what he was dealing with if Karlsson was healthy. But Karlsson's out, so I think Burnsy gutted it out. And he's one of those elite athletes that if he's going to dress, you're not going to limit his minutes. He's going to play and give you what he's got. And sure enough, you know, he found a way to get our offense sparked and play his typical 25 minutes of important ice for us.
Sharks head coach Peter DeBoer, my guest. Since you mentioned Karlsson, let me ask you about him. You know, he's been out for the last couple of games, but if you go back to when you got him in September, you knew before he came in you had one of the best defensemen on the planet. But what's it been like working with him, and might he be even better than you thought?
He is better than I thought, and that's high praise, because I knew, you know, I saw firsthand how elite this guy was. You know, when he's on, he played 2 months of hockey in December and January before he got hurt, where he controlled the game, you know, like a point guard in basketball, you know, for most of the night in those games when he was on the ice, and slowed it down and sped it up when he wanted to. He's just one of those unique athletes that has that ability, and we miss him in our lineup. Thankfully, Burnsy's taken his game to another level in his absence, and we've got a group of depth defensemen there that I think have really stepped up and fill that void as well as we can. But we need him back for the playoffs, and you know, if we're going to go on any kind of run, he's going to be a big part of that.
You know, Peter, elite to me is the word. You've been around the game a long time. You've been around a lot of elite players. What is it about elite players that makes them elite? In other words, is it just about talent, or is it about their approach to the game and their mentality?
It's all of the above, and I'm fortunate enough here. I would put Brent Burns, Erik Karlsson in that category. We also have Joe Thornton here, who's almost 40 years old. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, just past Gordie Howe on the assist list for all time in the NHL, and he's elite too. And I think the one thing about all those guys, for me, is they love the game. They have a passion for it. They played, you know, in Jumbo's case, he's played 20 years in the league, and he's still the first guy in the weight room and at the rink. Loves the road trips, loves getting on the plane. You know, that stuff never gets old, and I think the other guys are the same. And the key thing is they make other people better. And I think that's the thing. There's a lot of really good players that in their own right can get out there and do their thing. But these guys, when they're on the ice, they make the other four guys on the ice better, and that's what separates them.
Yeah, I don't know what's more scary, Peter, the fact that we're talking about a guy being near 40 now, Jumbo, and he's passing Gordie Howe. I can remember when he came up.
Yeah.
And it does not feel like 20 years ago. The team also added Gus Nyquist from Detroit at the trade deadline. Talk about him for a minute. What do you like about his game?
You know what I like? I like just how solid he is. He's a little understated, but just does everything well, and I think that goes back to growing up in the Detroit culture. You know, great coaching from Babcock, and then following up here recently, and then obviously they've won a lot there over the last 10 years that he was there in that Jeff Blashill recently as his coach, but he started with Blash in the American League with Detroit. So this guy's been well coached for his entire career at the NHL level. Played on winning teams, knows what it takes to play deep into the playoffs and the little things and the details of the game that are important at that time of year. So, he fits with our group. He's a good player and he's going to really help us.
Peter DeBoer joining us for a few more moments. You know, one thought about Blashill, since you mentioned him, I know, or reportedly you had a conversation with him at the time of that trade. Was that conversation helpful to you? Like, what do you guys talk about?
You know what? It really, when our trade deadline, there's only 20 games left in the season and the playoffs. So it just gave me a head start on getting to know the player. You think you can get to know a player in a game or two, but it takes longer than that as a coach, you know, to find out what works for him. You know, can he handle being pushed hard? Do you need to pat him on the back more than kick him in the you know what? You know, it was invaluable, that conversation, because it really gave me a head start on Gus as a player, what to look for when he's playing well or when he's playing poorly. You know, what are the areas that I need to really push him to work at? That typically takes a year to figure out on a player. And you know what, a conversation like that with a guy who's coached him for 7 or 8 years, you can really get a running start on it, and it was invaluable for me.
And then Peter, you've got a guy in Charlie Townsend who has played a really key role behind the scenes. He started out in the organization as a video coach back in the day, and now he works with you and the coaches with analytics, advanced metrics, and numbers. How do you go about taking that information and then incorporating that into what you're doing as a head coach?
Well, that's the new age of sports now,
right?
Is the analytics angle to everything and the tracking. We had all our players tracked at the All-Star game, where they're actually tracking how many miles they've skated at what speed. So it's gathering all that information, and you need somebody with a hockey mind and a hockey knowledge to take that data and sift through it and find out what's important for you and your team and your staff and the identity of your team. And I think Charlie does that. He's got a great combination of having played and also the analytics piece of it. And I think that's obviously where all sport is going, is how we deal with the immense amount of data that we're all getting now as coaches on the game and our players.
You know, the final thought, and I bring that up because of that very reason. We see it in every single sport. But then from talking to one NHL coach to another, the one thing that keeps coming up, Peter, and you know this as well as anybody, it's a funny game now. It's a funny game in the sense that the puck can take really funny bounces that you simply cannot account for. As a head coach, then, how do you find that right balance of preparing and taking all that data, all that intel, and then knowing that things are just going to happen that there's no way you could ever prepare for?
Yeah, that's a great point, and that's the great line you have to walk as a coach, and I really think that's experience. I think there's nothing more important than your eye test and the experience of knowing exactly that there's a lot of things you can't explain, and there's a lot of analytics out there that don't matter. I think experience teaches you that, and I think for all young coaches out there, you have to really force yourself to walk that line where you're using your instincts and your eyes as much or more than you're using the data they're giving you.
He is the head coach of the San Jose Sharks. Once again, has led them to 98 points or more in 8 of the last 3 seasons. San Jose is at home against Montreal on Thursday. Peter, glad we could finally do it. So nice to have you on the program. Thank you very much. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. You too.
Let's go to Jason in Harrisburg. It's good to have you, Jason. What's going on?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. How about you?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that Tyler and Edmonton's email about Matt and LA's golden ticket on Friday was rich. My favorite thing about Tyler is how he attacks things like he's one of the elite callers. I heard both his 2018 Smack-Off call and his recent tandem call with his Canadian bro. Both calls speak for themselves, Jim. And even though his analysis for why Matt got his golden ticket is probably accurate, The irony is that Tyler is so infused with so much self-love that he doesn't realize the only reason he gets so much room on the show is because Canadian on American crime is good for the jungle. I know it probably takes him for this, Jim, but Matt in L.A. makes me laugh more than Tyler does. I'm not sure if I'm laughing with him or at him, but I'm laughing. And the last time I can remember Tyler making me laugh was either when he was calling American fat or when he was calling and talking about moose meat as the best, leanest meat you can get. And speaking of Americans being fat, and I know this may rub some of my fellow Americans the wrong way, Tyler's right. I recently was at a swimming pool in a warmer part of the country, and I haven't seen that much exposed blubber since I saw a National Geographic special on elephant seal breeding season. I'm sure you've at least seen some pictures, Jib, you know, where every square inch of rock and sand is covered with thousands and thousands of pounds of flesh, either lying unmoving in the sun or heaving their massive bulk in that rolling waddle towards or away from the water. That's what it was like at the pool, Jim. And I don't think Tyler's gone far enough. It's one thing to be morbidly obese. It's another altogether to flaunt it. If you're a dude, I shouldn't have to verify that you're wearing a swimsuit by walking around behind you because your gut hangs down so far in front that I can't see your shorts. And if I have to ask you to hold up one of your rolls so I can finish reading one of your stupid tattoos, you should probably squeeze into a shirt. Just cover it up. And Jim, since I'm being perfectly honest, Tyler was right about the American obesity epidemic, but entirely wrong about what it means. If you think about it, this epidemic is a result of our success as a nation. As a matter of fact, we are the only country in all of recorded history where the average person is more likely to die because their heart exploded from overuse rather than starvation. If anything, we're victims of our own success. It's the same reason everyone hates the Patriots, Jim.
It's a very fine line between getting run and getting wrecked. Let's go to Waterford. Orion in Waterford. Orion, what's going on?
What's going on, Romy? So you start the show with an L.A. take about the Lakers. You start the second hour with an L.A. Dodgers interview. You've had the Matt signal up all day. Where is this guy? I'm pretty sure he's in a basement pit somewhere in Irvine being told he needs to put the lotion on his skin or else it gets the hose again. Come on, Matt. Do the right thing, dude. Come take a ride on a Schmacky Schmittle helicopter. War goalie fights. Outro.
That's great. Rack him. He's like, I see you working, Rome. I know exactly what you're doing. You started the show with a Laker take, and then you started the second hour with an interview with the LA Dodgers manager. It's a bat signal to try to get Matt to call so he can get Schmacky helicoptered. In Los Angeles, Matt. What's up, Matt?
Oh, crying. Pipe down, huh? Snagger 5, in and out softball squad. How you living? From Grenada to Granada Hills, from Harrisburg to Havana to Hawaii, you're welcome. The Matt in L.A. montage is getting you high on the THCBS Sports Net like a Lewin Sacktown spleef. Amped up like a Cruz Pedregon funny car victory, fully replete with the JR and BIC logos respectively. And today, I just want to call to let our man, the best NL manager yet to win a ring, one David Roberts, know that his boy Matt in L.A. got his back. And I'm calling my shot, man. Dodgers win it all. Walker Buehler, Cy Young, Julio Urias, comeback player of the year, and a champagne bath for Uncle Tommy. And since it's smack-off season, Romy, somebody tell Kale Smoothie Sonnen to drop the shake weight, stop getting his ass handed to him in sub-UFC events, and put down that roid spike, son, because it's smack-off season. Get into this here jungle, fool. That's all I got, Jim. War Matt pastry dish to Pontiac Pirate, fake fencing with that stupid pencil behind his ear. War Scarf Mellow Flabstony joining the mess that is LeBron's Lakers. Unwar Matt and Van's Tofurky rap lunch. Outro.
Matt in L.A. All right, clones. You're probably waiting now. Wait a little longer. Wait for it. Wait for it. Keep waiting till his next call because I'm not ripping it based on that. Lance in Iowa. Great to have you on the show. Lance, how are you?
Hey, Jim, I'm great. Great. Second time, long time. So I've run more halves than I can count. and I've run a few full marathons, and Hawks got no chance. I'm telling you, absolutely no chance. Because what's happening right now is you're fighting a curve. You've got an attrition curve, which is your body's breaking down as you're picking up the mileage. But your body's also building a curve where it can store and store more glycogen in your muscles. You've got to be at the sweet spot of that curve. I can just tell by listening to him, he's behind. He's got no chance. He's going to hit like that 16, 17-mile threshold. Man, that guy's going down. It's over. He's done.
Lance, I mean, you make such a good argument, a good physical argument. Is there any way that a guy like that or anybody could just grind through it? Like, when you hit that threshold at the 17-mile mark, is there any way that heart will carry you through?
It'll help. What he's going to have to do is have just an abysmally poor, like a horrible pace. One that's almost so embarrassing that he won't share it on the radio. That's the only way he's going to be able to do it. Of course, you could walk the rest of it, but then you can't really say you ran one. So if you've got this, I want to run a marathon itch, you really say you ran it when you walked it? I mean, and that is a moral dilemma. And we know Hawk, I mean, the dude doesn't have a moral compass. So the shoes he's running the marathon in, he bought online after having a salesperson work for him. The guy's got no moral compass. So yes, he will present it as he run. He'll put the window sticker in the car. But I mean, we know what's happening here.
Lance, I mean, you nailed it, but you're wrong about one thing. You know the guy's got no shame and no pride. He will say it on the air. He will say no matter what his time is. But also, Lance, we do know this, right? They have to run it in 5 hours or less or they get pulled off the course. So he can't walk it. He has to run.
Oh, hey, I hope it happens. I hope it happens. But here's the thing. Anyone who wants to do this, it's a great goal, but you really have to follow the curve because your body is only set up to be able to survive burning a certain amount of calories in a one shot. And you have to rebuild it. You build it from the inside out. You store more sugar than your body normally does. And the only way to do that is to beat it into submission. You beat it into storing enough for you to be able to survive the event.
That makes sense. So where should he be right now? If he's running on the 24th or 25th and he's at 13, he's at a half right now, where should he be?
Oh, man. He needs to be doing a 21-miler, 22, somewhere in there. And then your body will hold your cardio for about 10 days or so. And then in that last 10 days, you get over all the little blisters and all the aches and pains, and you walk into the thing fresh.
Right, so last thought, if he is where he is right now and he's not going to punk out, he's not going to pull out of this thing, what should he do between now and that day to give him the best opportunity for finishing?
Give his bib to somebody else.
Let's
good night now!